This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. A coalition working to fight child poverty in West Virginia presented its platform yesterday to the state legislature in anticipation of the session that begins today. Aaron Payne reports.
The Our Children, Our Future campaign to end child poverty presented 11 issues they want made priority for the upcoming 60-day session and then hand-delivered them to legislators at the Capitol. The coalition was co-founded by the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition Executive Director Stephen Smith, who explains the group's ideology is straightforward.
Our goal is very simple. We are campaigning to end child poverty. We think it's obvious that not a kid in our state should have to grow up in poverty.
Each issue was presented with expert and personal testimonies from citizens ranging from students to politicians during a press conference at the Capitol. Smith says that the process to develop the 11 issues began as always intended in the communities.
We had two policy forums in July where people could come from all across the state and share ideas. And, you know, at that meeting, there was all kinds of things we were considering. Then we had a policy symposium a month later. We brought everybody from our campaign together for 2 days to hash out what would work and what wouldn't, what was live, what could we win.
After these issues were compiled, the coalition held 72 meetings across the state, asking more than 1,000 West Virginians to vote for the issues they felt were the most important. The group placed 6 issues as top priority, including protecting funding for family support and early childhood programs and providing in-home family education. Also topping the list is an increase in minimum wage, as well as setting up Senate President Jeff Kessler's proposed future fund from severance taxes. Smith says it would ensure children of today receive benefits from resource extraction. The coalition also suggests a 3-step plan to combat substance abuse that includes dealing with methamphetamine production, offering help with abuse recovery, and helping recovering addicts find employment. They also focus on improving the overall quality of life for children, pregnant workers' fairness, and increasing the tobacco tax by $1 per package. Even though lawmakers don't officially go into session until later today, the intrinsic nature of the platform's creation has drawn the attention of state legislators, including Senator Ron Stallings.
I really appreciate the statewide approach and the grassroots approach that that I've seen over the past year, and I love your platform.
Though the movement is gaining traction, Smith acknowledges that the war on child poverty isn't won overnight.
That's going to take a long time, and the way we get there is by chipping away a little bit at a time each year until we can say this is a place where is the best place in the country for kids to live.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
And as state lawmakers prepare to gavel in today for the 2014 legislative session, the parties are making sure their priorities are known. The Republican caucus announced its legislative agenda yesterday, focused on promoting economic growth, government accountability, and future prosperity. Ashton Mara has more.
48th in job creation, 50th in median household income, 49th in K-12 achievement. Statistics House Minority Leader Tim Armstead says his party is looking to improve upon this legislative session. This year, the Republican caucus is focused on growing the state's economy through tax reform, setting priorities for existing revenue sources, and strengthening education.
They need to focus on putting people back to work.
They being the Democratic leadership, according to Armstead.
There are basic building blocks to putting people back to work. One of those is a fair tax system.
Specifically, Armstead says his party will introduce legislation to cut the tax businesses pay on their equipment and inventory. He adds that tax is putting West Virginia at a disadvantage when it comes to attracting new industry. Another economic initiative the party plans to take up is creating jobs impact statements to accompany some pieces of introduced legislation.
So many times in this body, in this legislature, we enact issues, enact legislation, and then we find out a year or two down the road that it had an unintended consequence. It put people out of work. It made it harder for people to get jobs in West Virginia. We don't want that to happen, and we think it's important that when we do bring a piece of legislation before the House, that we have people who are economic experts look at those pieces of legislation and say, here's what I see as the projection of what that will do for the economy of West Virginia. Here's what that will do for job creation.
When it comes to education, Armstead says his party plans to do more to return control to the local level and give parents more options when it comes to making education choices for their children. Armstead adds the party will continue to oppose Obamacare and try to find solutions for the state under the Affordable Care Act, fight the federal government on restrictions to both coal and natural gas industries, and support efforts to investigate the regulations of abortions in West Virginia. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Governor Tomlin delivers his State of the State address tonight. We'll have live coverage of the speech on West Virginia PBS and here on West Virginia Public Radio tonight at 7. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:39. Partly sunny today, temperatures in the 20s and 30s. Mostly cloudy overnight with lows in the teens and 20s. There's a chance of some light snow flurries in the northern panhandle with accumulations of up to an inch throughout the evening. Cloudy and mild on Thursday with temperatures in the 30s and 40s.
Support provided by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra's Canada Symphony Series, presenting the Best of Broadway, featuring conductor Lawrence Lowe at the Creative Arts Center on Tuesday, January 28th. Details at pittsburghsymphony.org/WVU. And support for NPR comes from Endless Pools, maker of compact pools for swimming, aquatic exercise, and family fun, indoors or out. More at endlesspools.com.
A pit filled with fracking water and other waste from oil and gas drilling in Fayette County does not meet the minimum pit and impoundment standards. The State Department of Environmental Protection asked Danny Webb Construction to come up with an acceptable plan for the pit. As Jessica Lilly reports, community members have been concerned about the waste site for years.
The permit for a waste injection well in Log Gully expired in October 2012. The permit's for a Class 2 UIC, or Underground Injection Control Disposal Well. Class 2 fluids come from oil and gas exploration, development drilling, and production fluids. James Peterson is the Underground Injection Control Permit Reviewer for the DEP Office of Oil and Natural Gas. Peterson says pit owner Danny Webb Construction is in the process of renewing the permit. Peterson shares what the injection well is made of.
Three levels of protection on the UIC well. You have cementing of surface casing to surface. You got cementing of the long string production casing above your formation you're injecting into, and you have a tubing and packer arrangement. It's a smaller pipe you put in that well, which gives you the ability to integrity test the casing of that well.
State lawmakers are considering other ways to dispose of fracking waste. Senate Majority Leader John Unger began the discussion during a meeting of a joint legislative oversight commission on state water resources last November. Since the water is mixed with various chemicals, pressurized, and pumped into wells to release the gas from Marcellus Shale rock formations during the fracking process, it's a critical component in the process. It's estimated that in West Virginia, each horizontal well requires about 5 million gallons of fresh water. About 10% of that comes back up during the process as flowback fluid. While new recycling practices adopted in the state are diverting about 75% of that flowback for reuse, Peterson points out that injection wells are still the best practice for disposing the remainder, at least for now.
You have to do something with those waste fluids. And to date, that's the best answer, disposal wells.
Peterson says the well is a commercial disposal site, which means waste can be shipped from a variety of places for disposal, including industries and municipalities.
When the well was first permitted, he was getting a lot of fluids from coal bed methane wells, both West Virginia and Virginia.
Most recently, though, Danny Webb Construction has accepted Marcellus waste from Pennsylvania as well as West Virginia, but there's no requirement to keep record of where the waste is coming from. Regardless, Peterson says the injection well wasn't posing the regulatory problem, but rather a pit or waste pond close to the site. When I visited the site last summer, there was a strong gas-like smell. Peterson says the UIC permit has not been accepted because the nearby sediment pond is not up to code. At a public meeting in June, community members shared concerns over the site. They worried the pit was leaking.
We do not see that it's leaking, but it has been compromised on top just where folks have been walking around the pit. So we're looking at bringing him up to current pit and pit construction standards, I guess you could say.
Peterson says Danny Webb Construction needs to fix the lining of the pit. Without it?
There's a potential that it could leak, but we haven't seen that it is.
The DEP also wants the company to install a leak detection system. The DEP denied the first plan and is waiting on the company to submit another for review. In the meantime?
They're no longer using the pit, but they can still receive fluids in the renewal process. They can do that.
Since the pond is used to remove solids from the waste, Peterson says Danny Webb Construction will need to use more filters at the site to avoid even bigger problems in the well itself. But that's not regulated, so it's up to the company to decide to use the filters. Danny Webb Construction did not immediately return our request for comment. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Lochgelly.
There are currently 17 permitted commercial disposal wells like this one in West Virginia. There are 54 non-commercial UIC disposal wells. Orange-colored streams have been commonplace for decades in Appalachia, but slowly people are cleaning the water, making it healthy for fish and other wildlife. As Julie Grant of the Allegheny Front reports, one innovative project in Pennsylvania is bringing together watershed advocates, regulators, and a mining company.
As a tomboy growing up in the 1980s, Melissa Reckner remembers crawling in the waterways near her home in Halsopple in Somerset County.
I very distinctly remember getting, now I know it's iron, I didn't know that's what the orange stuff was then, but getting that and black goo under my fingernails, you know, and unfortunately that was probably sewage, you know, that we just were kids, we didn't know any better.
But one small stream behind her house ran clean. There were crayfish and other life. So she wondered about the dead orange-colored water and black goo.
You know, my mom said it's just a bigger problem. And as one person, you didn't feel you could do anything about it.
Today, Reckner is director of the Kiski-Conemaugh Stream Team, a watershed group in Somerset County. And along with many other people, she is trying to do something about the 5,500 miles of polluted streams in Pennsylvania. The problem largely comes from abandoned coal mines. When water moves through a mine, it picks up heavy metals and becomes acidic. That acid mine drainage, known as AMD, creates the orange coloring in the streams and rivers. You might expect the companies that created the problems to be responsible for cleanup, but John Stefanko says that's not the case. He's deputy director for mine operations with the Department of Environmental Protection.
Basically, companies would come in, they would mine the coal, they would earn their profits, then they would just disappear. And then there was no program in place that would provide assurances that if they did cause a pollutional problem, that there would be monies to correct the problem or prevent the problem.
There's still coal deep in some of those mines, but the laws to access it are stronger now. Stefanko says about 5 years ago, Rosebud Mining requested access to an old abandoned mine near a small stream called Topper Run. In order to get to the 10,000 acres of coal reserves, Rosebud had to clean up some of the acid mine drainage caused by its predecessors. So the company offered to build a water treatment plant, something Stefanko says the state could not afford to do.
They were willing to basically build a facility, a $15 million facility. They will operate and maintain that facility for about 30 years, which is roughly the life of the mining operation.
During that 30 years, Stefanko says Rosebud has agreed to build a trust fund so the state has money to maintain the treatment plant once Rosebud relinquishes ownership. Melissa Reckner of the Kiski-Conemaugh Stream Team had her supporters write the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in support of the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean, how often do you have a private company willing to pony up that amount of money to treat these problems that are legacy problems that they really have no, I don't know the right word, like they're not responsible for those discharges.
Reckner says Topper Run, also known as the St. Michael's Discharge, is known as one of the Super Seven because it's one of the seven major mine discharges in the Kiski-Conemaugh watershed.
And just by treating the Topper Run or St. Michael Discharge, that is removing anywhere between 30% and 40% of the pollution loading to the Little Conemaugh.
And by cleaning the Little Conemaugh, Reckner says it will help the Kiski and the Allegheny Rivers as the water moves downstream into Pittsburgh. The project got state and federal approval late last year. The DEP's John Stefanko stands above the newly built water treatment plant. Stefanko says it's a success story.
It's a water treatment plant.
Yeah.
But it is one of the largest in Pennsylvania, if not the largest in Pennsylvania, of this type of treatment system.
To access the coal reserves, Rosebud needs to pump less than 5,000 gallons of water per minute out of the mine. But the company agreed to pump and treat twice that to help with water cleanup efforts. Within weeks of the plant beginning operations last summer, the Little Conemaugh River went from orange to nearly clear. Melissa Reckner says she heard people talking about it while attending the popular Flood City Music Festival.
Just hearing that, I went down through Johnstown and, you know, of course, my heart soared because I'm like, oh my God, look at this. It looks fantastic.
Reckner's not alone. John Stefanko remembers the orange waters of his own youth as he looks at the clear running stream.
It also makes you feel like, wow, I helped make this happen. I was a small piece of a lot of other people that did it. But to think I had a part in this just kind of makes it, you know, tingly, and it makes it wow, you know, it makes you show that anybody can make a definite impact in improving your environment.
Stefanko says now that the Rosebud deal is in place, other mining companies are stepping forward. They also want to mine deeper into coal reserves while helping to reduce the legacy of acid mine drainage. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
This story was funded through a grant from the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.